Saying, you know, you should go through Sunday. Oh, I didn't bring those that attendance sheet again. Okay. Yes. Yeah, you can close it now. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Tinamini Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatadeshtarane. So for so many days we've been hearing about the horrors of householder life, little slim glimmer of hope. But today we'll talk about a householder life that's perfectly happy, perfectly free from all contamination, perfectly free from entanglement, untouched by the modes of material nature, no struggle whatsoever, no difficulty, no problems. That's Krishna's householder life. I thought we'd end up with some nectar today from Krishna book and see how Krishna lived as a householder. Lord Krishna's daily activities. From the Vedic mantras we learn that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do. Natasya karyam karanam chavijite. If the Supreme Lord has nothing to do, then how can we speak of the activities of the Supreme Lord? From the previous chapter, it's clear that no one can act in the way that Lord Krishna does. We should clearly note this fact. The activities of the Lord should be followed, but they cannot be imitated. For example, Krishna's ideal life as a householder can be followed, but if one wants to imitate Krishna by expanding into many forms, that's not possible. We should always remember, therefore, that Lord Krishna, although playing the part of a human being, simultaneously maintains the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can follow Lord Krishna's dealings with his wives as an ordinary human being, but his dealing with more than 16,000 wives at one time cannot be imitated. The conclusion is that to become ideal householders, we should follow in the footsteps of Lord Krishna as he displayed his daily activities, but we cannot imitate him at any stage of our life. Lord Krishna used to lie down with his 16,000 wives, but also he would rise up from bed very early in the morning, 3 hours before sunrise. By nature's arrangement, the crowing of the cocks warns of the Brahma Muhurta hour. There's no need of alarm clocks. As soon as the cocks crow early in the morning, it's to be understood that it's time to rise from bed. Hearing that sound, Krishna would get up from bed, but his rising early was not very much to the liking of his wives. The wives of Krishna were so much attached to him that they would lie in bed embracing him. But as soon as the cocks crowed, Krishna's wives would be very sorry and would immediately condemn the crowing. In the garden within the compound of each palace, there were parijata flowers. Parijata is not an artificial flower. We remember that Krishna brought the parijata trees from heaven and implanted them in all his palaces. Early in the morning, a mild breeze would carry the aroma of the parijata flower, and Krishna would smell it just after rising from bed. Due to this aroma, the honeybees would begin their humming vibration, and the birds also would begin their sweet chirping sounds. Altogether, it would sound like the singing of professional chanters engaged in offering prayers to Krishna. Although Srimati Rukmini Devi, the first queen of Lord Krishna, knew that Brahma Muhurta is the most auspicious time in the entire day, she would feel disgusted at the appearance of Brahma Muhurta because she was not very happy to have Krishna leave her side in bed. Despite Srimati Rukmini Devi's disgust, Lord Krishna would immediately get up from bed exactly on the appearance of Brahma Muhurta. An ideal householder should learn from the behavior of Lord Krishna how to rise early in the morning, however comfortably he may be lying in bed, embraced by his wife. After rising from bed, Lord Krishna would wash his mouth, hands, and feet, and would immediately sit down and meditate on himself. This does not mean, however, that we should also sit down and meditate on ourselves. We have to meditate upon Krishna, Radha Krishna. That is real meditation. Krishna is Krishna himself. Therefore, he was teaching us that Brahma Muhurta should be utilized for meditation on Radha Krishna. By doing so, Krishna would feel very much satisfied, and similarly, we will also feel transcendentally pleased and satisfied if we utilize the Brahma Muhurta period to meditate on Radha and Krishna, and if we think of how Sri Rukmini Devi and Krishna acted as ideal householders to teach the whole human society to rise early in the morning and immediately engage in Krishna consciousness. There's no difference between meditating on the eternal forms of Radha Krishna and chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna. As for Krishna's meditation, he had no alternative but to meditate on himself. The object of meditation is Brahma, Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna himself is all three. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. The localized Paramatma is his plenary parcel expansion. And the all-pervading Brahman effulgence is the personal rays of his transcendental body. Therefore, Krishna is always one, and for him, there's no differentiation. That's the difference between an ordinary living being and Krishna. For an ordinary living being, there are many distinctions. An ordinary living being is different from his body and different from other species of living entities. A human being is different from other human beings and different from the animals. Even in his own body, there are different bodily limbs. We have our hands and legs, but our hands are different from our legs. The hand cannot act like the leg, nor the leg like the hand. The eyes cannot hear like the ears, nor can the ears see like the eyes. All these differences are technically called swajtiya vijtiya. The bodily limitation, whereby one part of the body cannot act as another, is totally absent in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no difference between his body and himself. He's completely spiritual, and therefore there's no material difference between his body and his soul. Similarly, he's not different from his millions of incarnations and plenary expansions. Baldev is the first expansion of Krishna, and from Baldev expands Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. From Sankarshan, there's again an expansion of Narayan, and from Narayan, a second quadruple expansion of Sankarshan, Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Similarly, there are innumerable expansions of Krishna, but all of them are one. Krishna has many incarnations, such as Lord Nrisimha, Lord Boar, Lord Fish, and Lord Tortoise, but there's no difference between Krishna's original two-handed form, like that of a human being, and these incarnations of gigantic animal forms. Nor is there any difference between the action of one part of his body and that of another. His hands can act as his legs, his eyes can act as his ears, or his nose can act as any other part of his body. Krishna's smelling and eating and hearing are all the same. We limited living entities have to use a particular part of our body for a particular purpose. But there's no such distinction for Krishna. In the Brahma Sangita, it is said, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti. He can perform the activities of one limb with any other limb. So by analytical study of Krishna and his person, it is concluded that he is the complete whole. When he meditates, therefore, he meditates on himself. The self-meditation by ordinary men, designated in Sanskrit as soham, is simply imitation. Krishna may meditate on himself because he is the complete whole, but we cannot imitate him and meditate on ourselves. Our body is a designation. Krishna's body is not a designation. Krishna's body is also Krishna. There's no existence of anything foreign in Krishna. Whatever there is in Krishna is also Krishna. He's therefore the supreme, indestructible, complete existence or the Supreme Truth. We were saying the other day how Lakshmi Devi prays to the Lord that anyone who has a husband other than you is missing out. She's got some incompetent person who can't even protect himself, what to protect, speak of protecting his wives and children and so on. And elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Rukmini Devi says, anyone who has a husband other than you just has a bag of mucus, bile and air with eyebrows and a mustache and so on. So here we find the glories of Krishna, how wonderful Krishna is. Krishna's existence is not relative existence. Everything else but Krishna is a relative truth, but Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Krishna does not depend on anything but himself for his existence. Our existence, however, is relative. For example, only when there is light of the light of the sun, the moon, or electricity are we able to see. Our seeing, therefore, is relative, and the light of the sun and moon and electricity is also relative. They're called illuminating only because we see them as such. Dependence and relativity do not exist in Krishna. Follow that? That everything's relative, like the sunlight is relative because there's no meaning to sunlight unless you have your eyes. Without your eyes, the sunlight can't be appreciated. Or your eyes are relative because without the sunshine, your eyes are useless. You may have 20/20 vision, perfect vision, but without the sun, you're blind. And so the sun is required, the eyes are required, and then there are intermediating demigods who are in the middle of the whole thing. Your eyes may be there, the sun may be there, but actually the demigods have to make the arrangement so that your eyes can see the sun. And then the object of vision. So everything is relative. Everything's interdependent in this material world. I'll go to Heidelberg tomorrow. If the car works, the car will work. If there's gasoline, gasoline will work. If there's, people are there with the gasoline station, petrol station, and so on and so on and so on. So in the material world, everything is dependent on everything else. But dependence and relativity do not exist in Krishna. His activities are not dependent on anyone else's appreciation, nor does he depend on anyone else's help. We saw in Brahma Bimohan Lila, Brahma stole all the cows and cowherd boys that Krishna was playing with. Krishna said, all right. He just expanded another set and kept on playing. No dependence. Do your nonsense. I'll go on with my pastimes. Swarat, completely independent. He is beyond the existence of limited time and space, and because he's transcendental to time and space, he cannot be covered by the illusion of Maya, whose activities are limited. In the Vedic literature, we find that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has multi-potencies. Since all such potencies are emanations from him, there's no difference between him and his potencies. Certain philosophers say, however, that when Krishna comes, he accepts a material body. But even if it's accepted that when he comes to the material world, he accepts a material body, it should be concluded also that because the material energy is not different from him, this body does not act materially. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, therefore, that he appears by his own internal potency, Atma Maya. We make a distinction. This is internal potency, external potency. And even if you think Krishna appears in the external potency for Krishna works just like the internal. No difference. He can do anything. So, therefore, no contamination. Krishna is called the Supreme Brahma because he is the cause of creation, the cause of maintenance, and the cause of dissolution. Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva are different expansions of these material qualities. All these material qualities can act upon the conditioned souls, but there's no such action and reaction upon Krishna, because these qualities are all simultaneously one and different from him. Krishna himself is simply Satchidananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge. And because of his inconceivable greatness, he is called the Supreme Brahma. His meditation on Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan is on himself only and not on anything else beyond himself. This meditation cannot be imitated by the ordinary living entity. These people who are meditating, soham, soham, I'm the Supreme. Here when we find out what the Supreme is, do they have that qualification? That any part of the body can act like any other part of the body? There's no difference between Krishna's within and without? That he's absolutely independent? Do they have that, these characteristics? And what's the use of meditation? I'm the Supreme. It's foolishness. If I'm the Supreme, why am I being kicked around like a dog? After his meditation, the Lord would regularly bathe early in the morning with clear sanctified water. Then he would change into fresh clothing, cover himself with a wrapper, and then engage himself in his daily religious functions. Out of his many religious duties, the first was to offer oblations into the sacrificial fire and silently chant the Gayatri Mantra. Lord Krishna, as the ideal householder, executed all the religious functions of a householder without deviation. When the sunrise became visible, the Lord would offer specific prayers to the sun god. The sun god and other demigods mentioned in the Vedic scriptures are described as different limbs of the body of Lord Krishna, and it's the duty of the householder to offer respect to the demigods and great sages, as well as the forefathers. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has no specific duty to perform in this world, and yet he acts just like an ordinary man living an ideal life within this material world. In accordance with Vedic ritualistic principles, the Lord would offer respects to the demigods. The regulative principle by which the demigods and forefathers are worshipped is called tarpan, which means pleasing. One's forefathers might have to take a body on another planet, but by performance of this tarpan system, they become very happy wherever they may be. It is the duty of the householder to make his family members happy, and by following this tarpan system, he can make his forefathers happy also. As the perfect exemplary householder, Lord Sri Krishna followed this tarpan system and offered respectful obeisances to the elderly superior members of his family. A little water. His next duty was to give cows in charity to the Brahmins. Charity is meant for the householders. The Brahmacharis don't give charity. They take. Sannyasis don't give charity. They accept. Manaprastas also accept charity. But grihastas, they're giving charity. Of course, others, they give knowledge or like that. But the householders are meant for giving charity especially. The Lord Krishna used to give as many as 13,084 cows. Each of them was decorated with a silken cover and pearl necklace. Their horns were covered with gold plating and their hooves were silver plated. All of them were full of milk due to having their firstborn calves with them, and they were very tame and peaceful. When the cows were given in charity to the Brahmins also were given nice silken garments, and each was given a deer skin and sufficient quantity of sesame grains. The Lord is generally known as Go Brahmana Hitayacha, which means that his first duty is to see to the welfare of the cows and the Brahmins. Thus he used to give cows in charity to the Brahmins with opulent decorations and paraphernalia. Note that this is 13,084 cows times 16,108, because the Lord was living in so many palaces. So 16,108 times 13,084 times 365 days. Every year, Krishna would give that many cows in charity to the Brahmins, as is daily business. A lot of cows. Then, wishing for the welfare of all living entities, he would touch auspicious articles such as milk, fire, honey, ghee, clarified butter, gold, jewels, and fire. Although the Lord is by nature very beautiful due to the perfect figure of his transcendental body, still he would dress himself in yellow-colored garments and put on his necklace of Kaustubha jewels. He would wear flower garlands, smear his body with the pulp of sandalwood, and decorate himself with similar cosmetics and ornaments. It is said that the ornaments themselves became beautiful upon being placed on the transcendental body of the Lord. After decorating himself in this way, the Lord would then look at marble statues of the cow and calf and visit temples of God or demigods like Lord Shiva. There were many Brahmins who would come daily to see the Supreme Lord before taking their breakfast. They were anxious to see him, and he welcomed them. Krishna. His next duty was to please all kinds of men belonging to the different castes, both in the city and within the palace compound. He made them happy by fulfilling their different desires, and when the Lord saw them happy, he also became very much pleased. The flower garlands, betel nuts, sandalwood pulp, and other fragrant cosmetic articles offered to the Lord would be distributed by him, first to the Brahmins and elderly members of the family, then to the queens, then to the ministers, and if there were still some balance, he would utilize it for his own personal use. The Lord is perfect in adjusting everything. Not that he'd personally take everything first. He's distributing. So in that way, he knew how to please everyone. There was no question of envy or miserliness. The Lord was freely distributing to everyone, so everyone was satisfied. By the time the Lord finished all these daily duties and activities, his charioteer, Daruka, would come with his wonderful chariot to stand before the Lord with folded hands, intimating that the chariot was ready, and the Lord would come out of the palace to travel. Then the Lord, accompanied by Uddhava and Satyaki, would ride on the chariot just as the sun god rides on his chariot in the morning, appearing with his blazing rays on the surface of the world. When the Lord was about to leave his palaces, all the queens would look at him with feminine gestures. The Lord would respond to their greetings with smiles, attracting their hearts, so much so that they would feel intense separation from the Lord. Then the Lord would go to the assembly house known as Sudharma. It may be remembered that the Sudharma assembly house was taken away from the heavenly planet and reestablished in the city of Dwarka. The specific significance of the assembly house was that anyone who entered it would be freed from the six kinds of material pangs, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. These are the webs of material existence, and as long as one remained in that assembly house of Sudharma, he would not be infected by these six material webs. The Lord would say goodbye in all the 16,000 palaces, and again he would become one and enter the Sudharma assembly house in procession with other members of the Yadu dynasty. Now this is Krishna, 16,108 Krishnas, says goodbye to each of his wives, then becomes one Krishna and enters the assembly house. Therefore Narada Muni was astonished. Narada came to visit the different homes of Krishna. He heard Krishna's living in Dwarka as a grihastha, king. So Narada Muni came, and Krishna greeted him, "Oh, the great sage is here." He got off his throne, he put Narada there. Narada was a Brahmin. So he put Narada Muni on the throne, and he was washing his feet and praising Narada. And Narada didn't say anything. He knew this is Krishna's pastime. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But to give the ideal example, he's respecting me. So Narada Muni stayed for some time, then he left. He went to the next palace. And again Krishna was there, and he acted as though he'd never seen Narada in the previous place. He again offered all respect, again doing everything. But Narada wasn't so shocked because he knew this is a yogic trick. Yogis can expand themselves into eight forms by mystic power. And Narad Muni was a yogi, so he knew how to do it. The forms, though, would be like television forms, you know. One raises his right hand, they all raise their right hand. They were all the same. So then Narad went to the next palace, he saw again Krishna was there. Next palace. And in each palace, Krishna is doing something different. Some palace, he's spying on the citizens. Some palace, he's riding a horse. Some palace, he's getting his son married. Some palace, he's welcoming a daughter-in-law. Some palace, he's swimming. Some palace, he's hearing the accounts. Some palace, he's talking with his ministers. Each palace, Krishna is doing something else. So then Narada was astonished. So many Krishnas in so many palaces, and each one doing something different. That's possible only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After entering the assembly house, he used to sit on the exalted royal throne and would be seen to emanate glaring rays of transcendental effulgence. In the midst of all the great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna resembled the full moon in the sky, surrounded by multi-luminaries. In the assembly house, there were professional jokers, dancers, musicians, and ballet girls. And as soon as the Lord sat on his throne, they would begin their respective functions in order to please the Lord and put him in a happy mood. First of all, the jokers would talk in such a way that the Lord and his associates would enjoy their humor, which would refresh the morning mood. The dramatic actors would then play their parts, and the dancing ballet girls would separately display their artistic movements. All these functions would be accompanied by the beating of mridanga drums and the sounds of the veena and flutes and bells, followed by the sounds of the pukvaj, another type of drum. Along with these musical vibrations, the auspicious sound of the conch shell would also be added. The professional singers called sutas and magadas would sing, and others would perform their dancing art. In this way, as devotees, they would offer respectful prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes the learned Brahmins present in the assembly would chant Vedic hymns and explain them to the audience to their best knowledge, and sometimes some of them would recite old historical accounts of the activities of prominent kings. The Lord, accompanied by his associates, would be very much pleased to hear them. So this is a description of Krishna's daily activities in Dwarka. Krishna showed the ideal example of a grihastha. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that actually our movement is meant for family life. In our Krishna consciousness movement, our whole movement is meant for family life. But not this material family, husband and wife and children, but Krishna's family. The goal of our Krishna consciousness movement is to enter into the family of Krishna in the spiritual sky, either in Dwarka or in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna has his eternal pastimes, and as living entities, we're also meant for taking part in those eternal pastimes of Krishna. At the present moment, we're entangled in material desires, material activities, material consciousness. But when we become purified by chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service, then we'll be freed from all material desires, and we'll be able to see Krishna and enter into the direct service of Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual sky. So this is our goal, not an ordinary thing. The materialists are very much eager to get some comfortable temporary situation, but the devotees know that it's not possible. So they're after this spiritual situation, to become situated in the association of the Lord, or the devotional service of the Lord. I'm going to stop here If there are any questions about anything we've talked about in the course of the seminar, you're welcome to ask. Yes?
I was thinking about the 12 Mahajans. There were 7 Grihasthas and 5 Brahmacharis. What was the position of Brahma actually?
Grihastha. He has 2 wives, Krishna Kshetra, Saraswati and Gayatri. 2 wives. Kapildev is Brahmachari. This Brahma, the story is there, he has his temple in Pushkar. There's only maybe 1 Brahma temple in the whole world, practically speaking. Maybe something is there, but actual temple of Lord Brahma, if you go to India, there's maybe 1 in Pushkar. That's central India. Rajasthan, huh? Pushkar. I think in Rajasthan. Yeah, Rajasthan. So that temple is there. Then he has 1 temple with his consort is nearby. And then the other consort is way up on the hill. Far away, there's another hill. And on the top of that hill, she has her temple. I think it's Saraswati. I forget which is which, whether Gayatri's with him and Saraswati's on the hill or the other way around. I think Saraswati's on the hill. So the story was that there was some sacrifice going on. The story according to the temple, sacrifice going on. And Lord Brahma was supposed to attend. He's supposed to take part in the sacrifice. So he was waiting for his consort, because the system is that these sacrifices would be performed in by husband and wife together. That was the religious principle. So he's waiting for his wife, maybe Saraswati. She's not coming, or she's just now coming, as they say. Delayed. So Brahma sent Narad Muni, find out what's going on with your mother. You can tell her we have to get going, the sacrifices. So she was delaying. Somehow she wasn't coming. So Brahma went to the sacrifice, and there was no, he couldn't perform it just by himself. He had to have his wife. So some other girl was there. I think Gayatri was the second one, if I have it right. So, all right, then he married that one and sat down. I think he married her at that point and sat down. Then sacrifice was going on. Then the first consort came. And she saw, my husband is there, and he's sitting with this other girl. So she got so angry, she took off and went off. And it said that she cursed him, that you'll only have 1 temple in the whole world. That's all. No one will worship you. In India, there's so many temples of Lord Shiva, so many temples of Lord Vishnu, many temples of the demigods, but Lord Brahma has only got this 1 temple. He's cursed by his wife. Nobody's going to worship you. That's the story. Yes?
Hello, Maharaj. I was just wondering, as you were reading in the question of Krishna, as his daily duties, he would visit the temple of various demigods. So I was wondering why he wasn't visiting one of any Vishnu temples or...
It mentioned God or demigods. So he was worshipping Vishnu. He's also worshipping the demigods.
But it's not really some practice for us, like we...
No. No. We're not meant for getting up every morning and doing Lakshmi Puja and Shiva Puja and Ganesh Puja and this Puja, that Puja. No. We're not a Hindu movement in that sense. We're not meant for worshipping all these different gods. Just by worshipping Krishna, Krishna Bhakti Kailo Sarva Karma Kritohai. Just by worshipping Krishna, you worship all the millions of demigods. They're all included. No need for separate functions for the others. Make everything simple. Just by watering the root of the tree, and water all the leaves and branches. Is that okay? Anything else? Yeah? Mr. Krishna?
This point of Lord Brahma needing the presence of his wife to perform the yajna, that was the system. If one wanted to perform this daily yajna morning and evening, then it was necessary to have the wife present there. It was understood in the Vedic culture that this is why one accepts a wife.
Right.
So that one can do the yajna. Not before the one in the family.
For religious duties.
It's because the yajna has to go on.
Forefathers have to be offered their pinda, the yajnas have to go on, sons have to be produced. Religious responsibilities have to be carried out, therefore. Yes. Sometimes Prabhupada says that, several places. There's one or two bas, not many, many. Especially because in this age, actually we shouldn't have children unless we can make them Krishna conscious. And unless we can support them also. Once you've got 7 children, 10 children, then how much you spend your whole life working to support all these children? Then how will you be Krishna conscious? And how will you make others Krishna conscious? Otherwise, in previous times, it was no big problem. People used to have, what to speak of, many children, many wives also. By each, just like Krishna, he had 16,000 wives. Each wife had 10 children. What a big family. But in Kali Yuga, if a man can support one family, one wife and 1 or 2 children, he's considered Visharada, very expert. How do you do it? It's like, so it's not very much recommended. Also, that's in one sense a materialistic calculation, to have a nice wife, nice children, nice home, nice this, nice that. We're more concerned with how Krishna will be served than how our own family happiness will be achieved.
Is it true that Prabhupada said his idea with his householders was let them marry, have 1 child, and then let the man take sannyas?
I never heard. I don't know. Yeah?
I heard that he commented about that.
I don't know. I've seen in a couple places 1 or 2 children, you know, probably something like that. Not so many. Because it will become a burden. It becomes a burden. Just like we were discussing the other day, that some people, they just can't manage even a wife. Even to be, you know, to have a wife and 1 child is like beyond their capability to support. So such persons shouldn't be married. They should go on with their spiritual activities. They should be divinity students. And those who are capable, they can get married. Or Prabhupada said, actually the system was that a very capable person, he'd marry several wives. And that would free some men. They wouldn't have to marry any. So anyway, that's why Krishna consciousness movement is not to make a big expansion of family life. Simple, manageable, as far as possible. that okay? More? Yes?
Is there any reason given why it is necessary that the wife is there for the yajna? What it means?
What it means?
The
Krishna Kshetra, you're the Prabhu? One thing is it engages husband and wife. If the husband's doing the yajna, what's the wife doing? So, together they do these things. It sanctifies the family life. Husband and wife together are engaged in religious activities. So it's very, just even in social affairs, normal social affairs, if there's some social function, then the man is expected to be present with his wife. When the president dedicates some, you know, civic center or something, then he's expected to come with his wife. Then it's like complete. Even Kennedy had made that remark. He introduced himself as the person who accompanied Jacqueline Kennedy to Paris. So that combination becomes auspicious, husband and wife, when they're engaged in religious functions. So that was the Vedic conjunction. They do so many things together as religious duties, and that was required.
But it is said the yajna can't be done without the wife, so
yes.
He should have the wife. So if there's, let's say, the president should go somewhere, if he doesn't have a wife, the meeting still can go on, but here the yajna.
Although actually, like for example, candidate is not considered fit unless he has a wife, generally speaking. People who run for president, they have to have the whole picture, you know. They have to have a wife, a couple of kids. 2.4 kids. If possible, a dog. The whole picture. Then it's nice. So, otherwise, if we want to perform yajnas without complication, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatira Nita. Krishna Varnam Tisha, Krishna Sangopangas Tuparshanam. Jagya Sankirtana Prayer, Yajantehe, He is Sumedasa. If you're very intelligent, Sumedasa, then you'll figure, how can I do yoga without getting entangled with a wife? This is the answer.
The esoteric
meaning of Sumedasa. Distribute books, chant Hare Krishna, preach, be happy, then you don't need a wife. Or it can go the other way. If one wants to get married also, still, Jagya Sankirtana prior. It can be done husband and wife, or it can be done solo. Equally effective. Any other questions? Yes.
But isn't it that when the yajnas are performed just by brahmanas?
Yes.
Or is this for a different yuga?
Brahmins means Brahmins with their wives. The idea. These big yajnas, as far as I know, they're sponsored by the householders. After all, who has money for these big yajnas and everything? Yajna is especially the business of the householders. Jagyartha, Karmano, Nyatra. They're engaged in karma, in working. So the result of the karma has to be offered in yajna. It has to be done, offered in sacrifice. So these householder Brahmins, or householder kshatriyas, householders anyway, they would offer the results of their work in yajna. That was the idea. And there may be Brahmins, priests, and so on. They wouldn't have to, as far as I know, be present with their wives. But the person, the sponsor, the person on whose behalf the yajna would be performed, he would be present with his wife. Just that we find Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, he performed yajnas So he was there with his wives. He had how many? 18? I think so, 18 wives. Or Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was performing yajnas, so he was present with his wife. Otherwise, the Brahmins who were taking part and so on, they didn't have to be, as far as I know. Loud, you're getting drowned out by the machines.
I read in the Krishna book that Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas all should take sannyas. Do you know something about that?
One, in some places it said the Brahmins can take sannyas. They have four ashram. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas have three. They go up to Vanaprastha. The Vaishyas have two, the Brahmachari and Grihastha, and the Shudras just Grihastha. That's mentioned in some places. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, the Shudra only has Grihastha life. Yes.
Considering that Prabhupada at one point became disgusted with the whole business of marrying disciples, how is it that our society went so much in that direction of the white wave, as it is called?
Well, that's a sociological question, how it went. There, I suppose there have been different waves at different times, you know. I don't really know. Well, at one point, Prabhupada had the idea. He was very pleased by the way his householder devotees had particularly been preaching in England and maybe some other places also. He was very happy with that. They were doing nicely. So he made more householder couples for doing the same thing, especially the girls started coming. So there were all these unmarried girls, so what to do? So then Prabhupada thought, all right, marry them and make nice householder couples for opening centers, spreading Krishna consciousness. Husband and wife can work combinedly and it will be very nice. And that's what he wanted them to do. And some of them did that, and it was very nice, very much appreciated. Some of them still do that, and it's still very nice. But then he saw that among these Grihastha couples, there'd be so many problems. So many of them would be in difficulty. And he probably was getting tons of letters, just heaps of mail. My husband this, my wife that, what should I do? Tell him, could you tell him this? And, you know, whatever. And probably it was just a big burden. It was becoming a huge burden that they were becoming frustrated or entangled or sinful or whatever they were doing. And so Prabhupada became disgusted with it. No more householders. Otherwise he was encouraging it. Very nice. As this couple has done, you can also do. But then he saw that they weren't following their vows or they were having so many difficulties. So he became disgusted. And that was the end of that wave. Otherwise, at later times, I can't say, if in different places there have been different, you know.
So
one thing is that sometimes, well, there are different, I can give my own, you know, suggestions about why at different times in different places, but it would be in one sense, highly speculative and maybe inappropriate course material. You can find out what I think elsewhere. But one thing that we can say is that when people are nicely engaged in the Sankirtan movement, when they're strictly following the regulative principles, getting up early in the morning, chanting, engaging in the service of the deity, having ecstatic kirtan, preaching, distributing books, and morning to night engaged in devotional service, then naturally the force of that devotional service minimizes material desires. And when those material desires are minimized, practically one forgets that I'm a man or I'm a woman and I'm supposed to be happy in this bodily material happiness, temporary comfort. One forgets about these things and just wants to go on serving Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in spreading the glories of Krishna. And in that kind of atmosphere, the number of people who will marry is expected to be less because there's no need. But when the devotees are not properly engaged or in some other way there are discrepancies like that, then material desires become more prominent and the men start thinking, unless I have a wife, I won't be happy, and so on. Or even if, like that. Go ahead.
I just was wondering if you have a comment on the idea of counseling in this kind, especially for householders, because Prabhupada was disgusted that everyone was making him into a counselor, but it seems that there's some kind of need for that.
Well, first counsel is, there was one letter I heard recently cited where Prabhupada was cited as saying, so it was, it was discussed, there was some discussion about counseling. The letter was cited, so such and such couple have my blessings, you should first counsel them and then let them sit for the fire yajna. I was going to ask the speaker who cited that letter, you know, what he expected that Prabhupada meant by counsel them. And of course I can't say, I can't second guess Prabhupada. But my speculation would be that Prabhupada meant by counsel them, what are the rules and regulations? What are the vows? Counsel them that now you're going to sit down for this yajna and you're going to make these vows, you have to follow them. That, not that I like it for, you know, I'll try it out for 6 months, then if I don't like it, I'll cancel out and try again with somebody else. The householders should be counseled that householder life is a responsibility in the devotional service. Everyone has to perform that responsibility as a matter of duty. You may like it, you may not like it. Wife may be pleasing, not pleasing. Husband may be very nice or not so nice, according to your calculation. But one has to do it as a matter of duty. And then one has to leave it as a matter of duty also at the appropriate time. But not today, I get married and Thursday I take sannyas. That's irresponsible. Yes?
I just wanted to ask, was it that from the beginning Prabhupada would emphasize on trying to avoid problems in the material world and not taking marriage? I thought...
Beginning, middle, and end, Prabhupada emphasized that. Not that Prabhupada in the beginning he came and said better to avoid marriage, but actually all along. Prabhupada's teaching, if you look in all the books, we've been reading from 5th canto, we've been reading from 3rd canto, we've been reading from 10th canto, 9th canto. All these books were written at different times. And in all of them, Prabhupada says the same thing. Better to avoid. Better to remain brahmachari. Or after the age of 50, better to take sannyas. So So, and even in householder life, sex life should be minimized. Not that it's just one counseling. One of my godbrothers got married, and then suddenly he got an unsolicited letter from Srila Prabhupada, right after he got married, or maybe right when he was getting married, and Prabhupada counseled him that your wife is not a machine for sense gratification. Wife is not, and now I have this facility, unlimited sense gratification, I've got this machine. Prabhupada said, no, not for that. Strictly following regulative principles and engaging in the devotional service of Krishna. That's the business. Well, that counseling Prabhupada gave.
And Maharaj, could you comment on the situation when the two people are getting married and there is in some yatras, there is a test period that they can accept?
No, I don't have a comment.
I mean, Prabhupada's introducing such a system?
I don't have a comment.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't have a comment. I don't have comments on everything. Sometimes I don't have anything to say.
If there would have been in the beginning ashrams for ladies as well who didn't want to get married, who understood Prabhupada's message, who want to give their whole life, who came at an older age, wouldn't then the certain marriages not have taken place?
Well, actually, there were such places. There were such arrangements in the beginning. There were ashrams for the brahmacharinis, unmarried ladies. So that was going on. But it was generally found that the ladies were not very settled. They would fight with one another, or there'd be this problem or that problem. Because generally women need husbands. Prabhupada's saying here, better, in one sense, said so troublesome, let them avoid, women also. But the general experience is that women require husbands. So even if the brahmacharini ashram was there, they would not be very much settled up. So they would want to get married and there'd be some arrangement. Big white waves came that way, we can say. You know, women would approach the temple president, I require a husband, I require a husband. So the temple president has so many women requiring husbands, so he goes to the brahmacharis, such and such person needs a husband. So in that way. But therefore it's a perplexity. If they're single, then they're dissatisfied. If they're married, they're dissatisfied. The only solution, therefore Prabhupada said in that conversation, the only solution is to chant Hare Krishna and become Krishna conscious. There's no materially good arrangement. No materially good arrangement. The real solution to all the problems of life is to become Krishna conscious. Arrangements for material happiness will never succeed. You don't need temples for men. Men can just go out and preach. We've had that so many. That's ideal brahmachari life. Travel and preach. Travel and preach. Very difficult to establish a temple. What will you do? Say this temple is for men only, and the women, if they come, get out? You're living in... Temples are for preaching. They're not for our comfort. For our own selves, brahmacharis can travel. We don't need a temple. Temple is for the public. And the public is mostly grihastas. So how can you say to the men, you can come, but your wife can't come? That you can't say. And even if you start some temple or group of brahmacharis, so if some woman wants to come and serve Krishna, what will you do? No, you go back to the material world. That was the problem in the West that Prabhupada found. That by preaching, so many women would also come. And Prabhupada saw, these are spirit souls, we can't turn them away. You go back to material existence. So he tried to make different arrangements. And of course, those women who were very sincere and honest, they'd do nicely. They may have husbands, they may have no husbands, but they'll do nicely. Anyone.
Is it possible for the brahmachari to become full-time brahmachari if he is not directly involved in preaching?
Is it possible? Yes. Just like we have our pujaris, like Jananivas, Pankajangri. They're just serving the deities in Mayapur, those two brothers. So that's their preaching. That's their preaching. They don't have to go out from town to town and village to village. Hundreds and thousands of people are coming to get the mercy of Radha Madhav. So they're the servants of the deities. They don't require to travel and preach. And they also don't require a wife. When you have Radha Madhava, what do you need a wife for? They're happy, peaceful. But in general, for brahmacharis, traveling and preaching is a very nice life. Travel, preach, spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada quoted, a rolling stone gathers no moss. Follow? Yeah. Rolling stone gathers no moss. So for brahmacharis, it's very nice. Travel, preach, just like I saw this party, just went out to Holland, went out for a week, came in for a day, out again. Nice. Happy life. Very nice for brahmacharis. Don't stay packed up in the temple. Travel, preach, distribute books, spread Krishna consciousness. Nice. Mm-hmm.
That sounds very nice for ladies. Because you speak all the time, men and...
Also nice for ladies.
But then, because I all the time come to the same point, then at a certain time those ladies also are older, and then they should have also some place actually where they can worship the deity, where they can... Then also the need for a husband doesn't come till after their preaching, understand?
Doesn't come till...
Well, after their preaching, they cannot continue to go out, or they cannot continue preaching in such a constant...